Welcome to our final segment of this three-part series. Today, we're diving into the Functional Behavior Assessment, commonly known as the FBA. If you've ever wondered how schools identify and address challenging behaviors or what steps are taken to support students' unique needs, this conversation is for you. We'll break down what an FBA is, when it's used, and how it helps create effective, individualized plans for student success. Grab a cup of coffee and join us as we make sense of the FBA process together. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Special Ed, IEPs, 504s, oh my, Conversations with DCCEC. I'm Meredith. I have Tasha here with me.
Hi there.
Joining us today are Dr. Stephanie Crawford, Director of Mental Health, Dr. Bernadette Pidgeon, Mental Health Coordinator, and Ellen Kirchhoff, Mental Health Lead. They're here to help us decode the eval process and understand the key role mental health plays. Go ahead and introduce yourselves and your roles.
I'm Ellen Kirchhoff, Mental Health Team Lead for the district. I coach, mentor, and support our school psychologists and social workers.
I'm Dr. Bernadette Pidgeon, the Mental Health Coordinator for the district. I work closely with our psychs and social workers and also part of our crisis team and do professional development and case consultation.
Hi, I'm Dr. Stephanie Crawford, Director of Mental Health for the district. I oversee our mental health team, supporting kids with mental health concerns and special education needs, psychological safety, and our crisis response.
What are common sites a student might need an evaluation beyond academic struggles?
The first thing that comes to mind is that behavioral struggles might look like externalizing behaviors where there are things that are disrupting class, disrupting theirs or somebody else's access to learning.
And that is what the team that the counselors are a part of and our school nurses and our prevention staff working with all students. And so they've been working at the school level to make sure our staff know when you have a concern, here are your people at the school level that you can go to ask for a consultation, strategy ideas, before thinking that a student might need an evaluation. So behavioral things.
When is a functional behavior assessment triggered or deemed necessary?
We do functional behavior assessments in a similar fashion, right? There's a concern about a behavior. So we look at interventions in place. Does the student need interventions, behavioral supports or interventions consistently that we want to really understand the behavior and the function? Another reason would be is that the behavior impeding safety of themselves or others, staff or peers, or is it impeding their learning or learning of the peers? If any of those pop up, then we go down the route of, do we need a functional behavior assessment?
You seeing these at certain levels, like elementary, middle, or evenly spread?
That's pretty evenly spread. Elementary, we probably see a little more of those externalizing behaviors. And once we get towards high school, we may see a little more internalizing behaviors, shutting down, head on the desk, avoiding class barriers.
How is that different from a normal psych evaluation?
A special education psychoeducational evaluation looks at whether you're eligible for special education or not. A functional behavior assessment is really just looking at behavior. It's really honing down on one specific behavior or several behaviors and looking at the function of each behavior. Because we consider behavior to be communication, a functional behavior assessment is getting down to like, what is that need and what interventions can we put in place to meet that specific need that the behavior is communicating? So even our general education students can get a functional behavior assessment.
Can a parent request a BIP or does the functional assessment have to happen before that? What's that process?
We do the functional behavior assessment and write a behavior intervention plan with BIP. If a parent is getting repeated phone calls home, or saying, we're constantly seeing this behavior, they can certainly inquire, be like, are we going down the route of a FBA? Are there interventions that we need to put in place for my student? I would say if there's a pattern of the student being sent home or phone calls home, or even sometimes some teachers have those little sheets that they send home. Yes, so parents can definitely inquire.
Are there things to help parents feel like my kid isn't going to get picked on all the time because of what they're saying? Like threat to harm self, but it's just to escape class, not in the plan yet. It's their baseline behavior.
Sure. Sometimes there's behavior that feels unsafe, or maybe there's actual sometimes unsafe behavior where they are making maybe threats to themselves or others. So we're always going to address a safety concern following our safety procedures. So if a child were to say, I'm having like suicidal thoughts, mm-hmm. or I have suicidal thoughts and ideas on how to end my life, we're going to address that with a suicide assessment and working with the family on how that ended up and what supports are needed. If they're threatening others, we're going to address that with our threat assessment screen and possibly a bigger threat assessment, depending on how that situation works out. But then we do know that we have students that sometimes repeatedly might make statements around safety. And as we're working with the parents and the team, it's becoming that pattern. It's happening maybe multiple mm-hmm. times a week or multiple times a day. We wouldn't ask you to do 10 safety assessments in a day. Then we would start looking at that more of that behavior. And so how can we look at, we're going to always address safety, but we also need to address this as a behavioral component as well. Do we need another FBA? Does the current FBA touch on this behavior? We need to make sure our BIP is also addressing this, because twofold, we're going to have a safety plan for safety concerns, but that might go away once they're safe and stabilized, where the behavioral plan is going to stay in place to help them replace those statements with something different to voice frustration or voice a need, and then hopefully reduce those comments and get them to nothing so that they have a better way of communicating their needs.
So is that an effective needs group for these concerns, or can they just be gen ed still?
It can be a general education student that's having a lot of needs. And as Bernadette said, our general education students can have an FBA and a behavioral intervention plan. It can be students on a 504 in special education receiving mild, moderate support. And it could be our students in a self-contained program like an effective needs. So all of the above will get whatever level of support and interventions that they need.
Functional behavior is not special education services.
No.
Fascinating.
Typically, a student does have an IEP. If we're looking at a pattern of behavior for a gen ed student, we can do an FBA and put a behavior intervention plan in place. But then we really have to understand, is there an educational impact to this behavior? And maybe we are going down the route of an evaluation for special education. But if not, if interventions are working and the student is accessing their education, we don't need to go down that route.
There's also behavioral RTI, not mm-hmm. just academic. We could be putting interventions in place, like with reading or math or something else, seeing if our interventions are working. If not, then we may go to a functional behavior or special education assessment. If we can deal with it and find things that are successful without having to go down that road, then that would be the first step.
It sounded like you wanted to share some information with our parents. Go ahead.
One of the things we want to share is just all of the education and training that goes into people who work in special education. They are getting graduate degrees, master's or doctorate level. And in mental health, our school social workers are getting graduate level degrees and they're doing internships before they start to work. The same is for our school psychologists. There are two degree paths that they can do. One is a specialist level and one is a doctorate level. They're also, a specialist is getting a master's plus extra hours in doing an internship. And then the doctoral person is getting all those doctorate hours in doing an internship. We're proud of the programs in Douglas County. We have social worker and school psychology internships. And we just went through a process last year for our doctoral internship, because at the doctoral level, there is an opportunity to have accreditation from the American Psychological Association that you've met all their standards to be a good training program. So we went through that process. We are part of a consortium with Aurora Public Schools and the University of Denver in Colorado. We had to do a big report on our procedures. Site visitors came, visited our schools and talked to staff, interns, supervisors, and administrators. They talked to us, reviewed everything from how we recruit, how we're training, how do we have the funds for this and the support. And then you wait a long time. That happened in March. And we had to wait until July for them to review and vote. We found out at the beginning of the school year that we received accreditation. You can either not be accredited, a partial accreditation, or get full accreditation. We received full accreditation for 10 years.
Wow.
This is exciting. There's only one other school-based accredited program in Colorado, and 17 in the United States. This is a big deal. This is meaning that we bring in people from the metro, but all across the country. And many doctoral programs will say to their students, you can only apply to accredited programs. So we're getting just the highest level of graduate students that want to come to Douglas County because of this accreditation.
How many interns do you have?
Currently, we have 2 doctoral interns, 3 specialist school psychology interns, and 2 to 5 social workers. We model our programs after the accredited program, and we meet weekly together and combine everyone so everyone's learning from each other from all the multiple lens that they have.
What are the interns doing? Are they observing you? Are they in the schools? Are they going to different schools? What does that look like?
They're typically in the schools with their supervisor. We do a slow release model. So the supervisor can assess where that student is, what their goals are, and tailor things. They may start side by side or shadowing. Our interns tend to be motivated. The goal is to have them fully independent by the end of the year, ready to hit the field and be marketable. It's really important to have our social workers in this group as well, because social work is a broad field and graduate programs really have a lot of differences in terms of how much training for school work they do. School work can look different districts and states. This has been an excellent opportunity to provide a high quality internship and grow our own psychologists and social workers. We try to keep them if we can.
Interns are yearly, so you'll get new ones.
So you're drawing people that want to come because you're accredited. Congratulations. Anything else you wanted to share?
I think one thing we didn't talk about how that programming might look in schools for our students and our philosophies on how we approach all students, including special education students.
We wanted to make sure parents and students understood all students are general education students first. If they need more support, or we want to provide that support, but we also know how important it is for all students to feel a part of their school and that they belong, have a voice there. And so it's really a good top priority for us as well to make sure that students have a connection to school, they have trusted adults at school, and that they really, those are important things that they need beyond specific programming.
So it's like the focus then is of your programming, is that with the interns or overall?
Overall, how we're approaching students is first and foremost, they are a part of their school. Everyone is making connections, whether it's the general education teacher, counselor, special education teacher, school psychologist, or social worker. They're all students together, and each student gets what they need individually.
Thank you to our guests. Our guests provided us with so much information regarding the IEP referral, the evaluation process, the IEP meeting, and some advice, and it helped us kind of digest more what an FBA looks like and why it would be needed. If you missed the first 2 parts, I hope you go back and listen. That's the Oh My, the IEP evaluation, and Oh My, the IEP meeting and advice for parents. Thanks again.
Be sure to check the show notes for any resources that have been mentioned. You can also learn more about DCCEC on our social media or go to our webpage, dccec.org. If you like this podcast, please like, share, follow, and let other parents know about us. We're just trying to get conversations out there. If you have any suggestions, definitely let us know on those social medias or even at info@dccec.org. That's our email. We're really excited. We have lots of conversations that are coming up. So until next time, bye.